From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, it's Politically Georgia. I'm Greg Bluestein. Jeff Duncan was once a rising star in Republican politics. Now he's one of the most prominent Republican critics of Donald Trump. We'll talk to him today about why he's urging other conservatives to vote for Joe Biden.
I'm Patricia Murphy. A bipartisan group of current and former elected officials recently spent an evening remembering a time when they were able to disagree better. We'll talk to two of them.
I'm Bill Nygut. Plus, they missed their completion deadline by some 7 years and ended up spending $20 billion more than originally projected. But last week, Georgia Power flipped the switch and put its new nuclear power units online. We'll talk with PSE Commissioner Tim Echols about what it means for customers.
We invite you to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode of Politically Georgia. This is Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
Welcome to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia, setting the stakes in the agenda for Georgia politics. I'm Greg Bluestein with Bill Nygut and Patricia Murphy. We have an absolutely packed show today, so let's start out with some breaking news. Former Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan has long been a critic of Donald Trump, warning that his corrosive brand of politics has hollowed out the Republican Party. But he broke ranks with other Republicans in a major way on Monday in an Atlanta Journal-Constitution op-ed where he said he's voting for Joe Biden and urging other Republicans to do so. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Well, Jeff, we've seen plenty of other Republicans who aren't supportive of Donald Trump say he's still better than Joe Biden. That includes Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, who has plenty of his own reasons not to endorse the former president's comeback bid. So why are you taking this stance that you're going to vote for Joe Biden in November?
Well, I really look at the Republican Party as we've got to fix the Republican Party. It's broken. Obviously, I've written books about it. I've talked about it. I've gone all over the country. It's broken. And I think a majority of Republicans with enough, you know, maybe a cocktail or truth serum would admit it is broken. And so the best we've cobbled together is Donald Trump. But the reality is it's just going to extend the infection. If we don't cut this out now as quickly as we possibly can, and that's really what the piece was centered around, is we need a Republican majority in Congress to create that firewall around any sort of left-leaning policies that don't align with the strategies going forward for the country and quite honestly, for the problems that we face. But we've got to do it now. And I think Donald Trump is very, very easy to see now. He's not the face of the future for the Republican Party. He's not the current face of the Republican Party. He shouldn't be. And now we're watching all these grisly, grueling details play out where we thought he was a Republican, but he's not. He just isn't. He's a fake Republican. So a lot there to unpack. But look, there's going to be two strategies. I'm sure we're going to hear all about the quotes and folks pushing back that are hardline Republicans and they don't think this is the best foot forward. I think we all agree Donald Trump's not the future of the party. There's just different strategies to get there. Mine is to get him out as quickly as possible, even if that includes voting for Joe Biden.
So, Jeff, we have all covered the Republican primary of 2024. We covered 2020, 2016. The energy in the party when we talk to activists and many, many voters is with Donald Trump. And so when you say that the Republican Party needs to be fixed, do you think the Republican Party thinks it needs to be fixed? We talk to a lot of voters who have no concerns about Donald Trump. And if they do, they still want to vote for him anyway.
Yeah, there's a spectrum of voters across the Republican Party, just like there's a spectrum of voters across the Democrat Party. There are folks like me that are conservative. Look, I've got a track record of being the most conservative you know, one of the most conservative voters in the legislature in my 5 years, and certainly as lieutenant governor, I championed a number of conservative policies. I'm just not angry and I'm not mad about it. And I think that's a growing spectrum range that's growing inside the Republican Party. And we really have no place to go. And look, I genuinely believe if we gave Donald Trump 4 more years to the Oval Office, it would be an even bigger disaster than what we saw play out on the tail end of his last presidency. Just the willingness to lie, the willingness to cheat, the willingness to not embrace democracy, all for the sake of just being more powerful when he wakes up in the morning. That is a dangerous position to be in. And, you know, like I said in the piece I closed it with, and this was a very heartfelt sentence because it meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to the folks that support me that probably disagree with this. But I'm choosing to vote for a decent man over a criminal defendant and somebody that doesn't have a moral compass. I just don't believe that is the right person to pick to lead this country.
Jeff, I'd love to talk to you about another paragraph in the essay that you wrote for the AJC. You say this: the GOP will never rebuild until we move on from the Trump era. We understand your position on that full well. But then at the end of that, you go on to say, at the same time, we should work to elect GOP congressional majorities to block his second term legislative agenda. It sounds like what you're suggesting is you're willing to vote for a Joe Biden to get rid of Donald Trump, but you want him to be essentially toothless in his second term. Those are the words you use. You don't say so that we can work with them on things that we might agree upon. You say block Biden's agenda.
Well, I think it puts us in a great position. I think it brings us back a few decades where Republicans and Democrats used to sit in the room and work through policy differences and negotiate and get to that 80-20 rule that Ronald Reagan used to rub our noses in every minute of every day. I think that's the position with a split leadership model with Joe Biden as president, a Republican majority in Congress gives us that ability to sit at the table and negotiate. You know, you think about the how much Donald Trump has sidetracked or derailed Republican opportunities to have wins against this Biden administration, right? Let's just take immigration. The Lankford legislation that came forward finally funded what we wanted and harped about for so long on the border. And then just because it was going to give a win, at least superficially, to the Biden administration and to Democrats, it was Donald Trump's forceful hand of tipping the scales to say, oh, that's not a good idea anymore. That should have been a win for Republicans. And as I was explaining this to somebody earlier today, instead of saying we own the libs, it's we worked with them to understand our policy directions. Mm-hmm. We have input, right? And that's really, you know, if you look back to see how I operated as the lieutenant governor in that chamber, it certainly wasn't a perfect process. And there was certainly dissension between R's and D's. But building consensus was one of the most powerful lessons I learned as lieutenant governor in Georgia as the president of the Senate.
We're here with former lieutenant governor Jeff Duncan. And I want to build on a question that Bill Nygut just asked you, LG, about your conservative track record. Because as the number two politician in Georgia, you sponsored and backed a number of very conservative measures, including the anti-abortion law that passed in 2019 that is really front and center of this November White House campaign. Joe Biden supports abortion rights. You backed a measure that is one of the strictest anti-abortion laws in the country. How do you reconcile your support for a Democratic president who wants to undo one of the landmark pieces of legislation, at least to conservatives, that passed in Georgia?
Well, the issue per the court's latest ruling is that this sits at the state level. And so our state policies of recognizing a heartbeat as the beginning of life is what Georgia's policies are. California's policies are going to be different on abortion. In Illinois and Pennsylvania and New York, every state is going to have its own positioning. And I'm comfortable with supporting the heartbeat bill. It was something that Brooke and I, you know, my wife and we certainly have been blessed to have three beautiful kids. And we've had a lot of discussions. We personally have recognized life at when we saw that heartbeat on the screen. It grabbed our hearts and souls. But that's our personal opinion on it. This issue sits at the state level, which I'm supportive of. I think there's additional issues out there that should sit at the state level. Georgia is not going to be California, and I'm proud to say that. And folks in California probably are proud to say the inverse of that.
So when I read your statement, and it made a ton of news around the country, as you know, I really could not help thinking this would have more impact if you were still a sitting Republican rather than a former elected Republican. And most of the Republicans we see coming out against Donald Trump in many cases either are not running for re-election or are already out of the system. Do you wish that you were still in the system, fighting it from the inside out? Do you think that could make a bigger impact with your fellow Republicans?
I think I'm perfectly positioned to have a platform to continue to move the ball down the field. And whether I'm getting credit for it or just simply providing air cover for Republicans to do and say what they know in their heart is the right thing to do and say. I mean, let's just unpack the 2020 election. How many folks one-on-one do you think come up to me that are Republicans and say, you know, that election was rigged? They don't say that. They're like, ah, man, I wish our party would just move on. I wish my district was a little more supportive of me talking openly about it not being rigged. And just keep moving the issue down the down, you know, each issue down the conveyor belt. If I'm here to just provide air cover for somebody else to do and say the right thing, so be it. That's exactly where it's at. I'm comfortable with the platform I've got. It's hard in my world to show up and be limited in what you can say and what you can do. And I just feel like the Republican Party needs more folks to step up and give the air cover and to be able to say what is genuinely true. Donald Trump is not the future of the party. I think we would get overwhelming support of that as we move forward across Republicans on all spectrums.
Jeff, I your essay, as Patricia just pointed out, got enormous attention around the country. And the question we've asked you before, and I'd like to pose again, given the piece, is what's next? You've now registered GOP 2.0 as a 501c4, I think. What does that mean? What does that give you the power to do? And what do you hope to do within that nonprofit structure, which, of course, is different from a charitable 501c3?
Yeah, this is just simply about creating a platform to be able to talk about where I think the policy over politics direction of our party needs to go. If we're just playing short-term petty politics and trying to figure out how to off-gas porn stars that are showing up in witness stands today and trials, and if we're trying to figure out how to explain a rigged election that is obviously not rigged, if we're trying to explain why Donald Trump was really a Republican when he spent $8 trillion of our money and put us even further in debt, to me, GOP 2.0 is a platform. Having this opportunity to be on here is a platform. Not everybody's going to agree with my words or with my direction, but showing them that there is a better way to go forward, speaking across the country, writing op-eds, showing up on TV. These are just opportunities that I think this is my time to use this platform to do and say what I believe to be the right way to go forward. And look, certainly I'm not going to bat 1,000, but I do think that there is a better direction for the Republican Party. And you know, I think myself and a handful of others are playing the long game, not personally, but playing the long game for the party, knowing that if we just kind of continue to do the same thing, right, we all know what this is the definition for. And so I think we just got to break the mold of Donald Trump and move on.
Jeff, speaking of what's next, there's already been speculation that your stance in support of Joe Biden could mean you could be open to a role as a de facto Republican spokesman for Biden, in a sense, much like another former Georgia politician, former Governor Zell Miller, a Democrat, played for George W. Bush way back in 2004 when he delivered the keynote speech. Would you be open, willing to ever playing that sort of role for Joe Biden, speaking at the Democratic National Convention, being a surrogate for him even on the campaign trail?
I haven't even given it a single brain cell of thought. I published the op-ed yesterday. I was in Valdosta, Georgia, watching, unfortunately, my son's high school baseball team get eliminated in the state playoffs. Yeah. Lowndes County is a really good baseball team. I'm worried that there's nobody out there that's going to beat those guys. And then we drove back all night just because we didn't want to stay in a hotel and have to get up and face that we went 0-2. But look, I haven't given it any thought. I'm just going to continue to do the right thing. In my opinion, I think there's a lot of Republicans, even those that are public facing in support of Donald Trump, know that this is probably the best way to shed this infection inside the Republican Party. And it's the quickest way forward. It's painful. The medicine doesn't taste good, but it is absolutely the right thing to do, in my opinion.
Former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, we know you have to go. Real quickly before you go, I do want to read you some of the quotes from Republicans who are disgusted or not amused by your stance. Georgia GOP Chair Josh McCoon says, literally no Republican is surprised by this. Must be contract renewal time at CNN. And your successor, Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones, says, every village has a useful idiot. I guess the Democratic Party has found theirs. Your response to that kind of rhetoric?
they're perfectly allowed to have their own opinions, and I get it. There's two pathways forward. I wish them all the luck on their pathway. I hope they have a better plan than me to fix the Republican Party and do it quicker so I don't have to stare down the face of Donald Trump on a vendetta tour for 4 years. That's their opinion. We'll see. I think at the end of the day, the wisdom-filled solution does not involve Donald Trump going forward for the Republican Party.
Well, thank you for joining us, Jeff Duncan. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation on how to disagree better. This is Politically Georgia from the AJC.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
Welcome back to Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Twice daily, delivered straight to your email, you can receive the AJC's Politically Georgia newsletter. Stay on top of all the important news, scoops, and exclusives from me and the rest of the AJC politics team. Just go to AJC.com/newsletters and sign up today. That's AJC.com/newsletters. I'm here in studio with Patricia Murphy and Bill Nygaard. I'm Greg Bluestein. So as we just heard, it's no mystery we are living in a world of increasing partisanship. So I want a bit of a palate cleanser from straight-up politics and talk about a remarkable event I covered last week involving two familiar voices, longtime followers of Georgia politics. Mableton Mayor Michael Owens is the former Democratic chair of Cobb County, and former Cobb Republican chair Jason Shepherd are both with us. Welcome to the show, guys.
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Good morning. Happy to be here.
Well, let's start with this event you guys held a week ago, because it was a packed house at a Marietta theater. The two of you took the stage to encourage a host of politicians and local leaders in Cobb County, one of Georgia's most politically competitive counties, to disagree better. Michael Owens, what does disagreeing better mean to you?
Disagreeing better is simply about getting to a point to where we can talk about the actual issues that get along. You know, this is not about trying to convert Democrats into Republicans or vice versa. Instead, it's aimed at really promoting a better understanding and dialogue that goes, you know, beyond the political grenades that we see today.
Jason Shepherd, you're the former Cobb GOP chair. You were a supporter of Trump way back when. Now you're not as much a supporter of Donald Trump. But how is this not just a fantasy, especially in Republican politics in the Trump era, to disagree better?
Well, and I'll give a little bit of a shout out to my fellow former Chattahoochee High School graduate, Jeff Duncan, who was just on. He is class of 93. As class of 94.
It's a small world in Georgia politics.
I support the Republican Party. I support the principles of the party and not necessarily the person who is heading up the party. I will be voting for Donald Trump. I don't blame Jeff Duncan for what he was saying, but we can stand firm on these principles because for me, it's the broader picture of where the of Republican administration that Donald Trump will bring in. We only have two choices. But we can do this and can bait the ideas without trying to demonize Joe Biden, without trying to demonize Donald Trump, and say, we are a nation of principles, we are a nation of ideas. Let's debate these ideas like we've been doing for over 200 years. And that is what this is really about, is that we can stand firm and we can fight for our principles, but we don't have to do it in a way that's hateful. We don't have to do it in a way that's toxic. And worse than that, we don't have to do it in a way that potentially breeds violence on both sides.
So, Jason, you're speaking my language. I want us to disagree better. I would like even people at their own dinner tables to disagree better when it comes to politics. But the reality of modern politics now, the incentive structure, is not to disagree better. It's to amplify and monetize. If you want to get reelected, particularly in these districts that are more and more gerrymandered, it is about disagreeing harder, tweeting about it and doing a small dollar online fundraiser. And that's the success structure right now. How do you get around that very real reality?
I think the way you do it is you have conversations like this. You have conversations like Michael and I did the other night at the Alley stage in Marietta. We have to have those voices of moderation, not moderation necessarily on principle, but moderation in form of civil speech, civil dialogue. And it is a battle because you're absolutely right, Patricia. This is all, if you go back to the roots of it, it's about fundraising. It's about money. It's about making the outrageous statement and having a small niche group send money in. While we've been talking about for decades, the silent majority of American voters, they're still out there. And they need to hear these voices. They need to pick up the AJC and read in it that there are Democrats, Republicans who believe that we need to temper the dialogue, to stand strong on principle, to fight for our districts. But you're right. A lot of times the election is over at the Democrat or Republican primary because of the way these districts are drawn. And there was a great talk led by former Congressman, former Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tom Price, on that very issue during the forum, that we're drawing districts that it's not competitive. There are 435 House districts nationwide, maybe 100, probably less. Buddy Darden, former Democrat congressman, said 100. Tom Price said less, that are even competitive. So it plays to pay to your base, who are the only ones who are going to be coming out to vote. And you don't have to go to the middle. Richard Nixon kind of famously said, and I'll paraphrase this quote, to win the Republican primary, you have to run as far to the right as possible. And to win the general, you have to run to the middle. Well, we have lots of members of Congress who never have to make that journey back to the middle.
Michael, what do you think right now is the general tenor of the various government agencies in Cobb County in terms of disagreeing better? And I think about, oh, the Cobb County School Board as an example of an organization where they're not particularly disagreeing better. Cobb County Commission, dominated now by Democrats. Talk about what you're going to do just in your own backyard in terms of helping people disagree better.
Sure. I think, you know, Jason and I coming together to host this, Cobb County couldn't be a better place to do so, right? And admittedly, we're a bit biased on that. But when you look at the ebb and flow of Cobb, you know, and the history it's had as being a stronghold for the GOP and the, you know, all the political giants that came from there. And we've all seen this shift to Cobb, you know, changing the political landscape, if you will. And now being a county that, you know, look, the largest mayor in Cobb County is a Democrat, right? I think we all know that. So, I think having it in Cobb County specifically, when you talk about environments that have this shift and have this change, you start to see much more of this, right? Because both parties, if you will, people are really running to polarize sides of this because it truly becomes about, you know, life and liberty. You know, it's like, who is going to control this area and this space? So, you know, having it in Cobb County and coming together really kind of sets the stage for us having discussions, really, really tough discussions, right, about policy and, you know, what I hear a lot about. And, you know, even me serving now in a nonpartisan role, you know, is that people want to talk about the issues you're going to get done, you know, and so much of the discussion that we have, whether it's the school board or county commission or even larger, obviously at the federal level is a whole different animal. But I hear from constituents all the time, what are we going to do about real issues that are going on? Right. And these political grenades and landmines that are out there, it makes good fodder for TV, but it doesn't change the lives of people. And I think at the end of the day, you know, more and more people are really, you know, wanting to center around, hey, what are you elected officials and political leaders going to do to come together to help improve our lives?
All right. So, Jason, let's pick up on that. I trust you. I believe you would like for people to disagree better, but you've made it clear you believe Donald Trump should be reelected president of the United States. The man who says, I will be your retribution. The man who demonizes anyone, forget about Democrats, Republicans who disagree with anything he has to say. I can't imagine how you wanting to disagree better fits into voting for Donald Trump.
I don't know that disagreeing better fits into voting for either one of these. I mean, we're talking also on the other side, Joe Biden, who told a group of African-Americans, Republicans want to put you back in chain. I don't know how that's any more vitriolic and any more plays to the Democrat side of the aisle. And, you know, we look at the protests on college campus. Once again, it's vitriol on both sides. It's from the river to the sea on the pro-Hamas. Not that we're... Everyone should be concerned about the lives of the average person living in Gaza, who is basically caught between two sides. And the problem we have in this election, that's why this programs like this are so important, is because we really don't have a standard on either side who's willing to bring down the conversation. And I have to look at my party and the broader picture of, you know, it's not just Donald Trump in the White House. It's all the appointments to the various agencies that will hopefully be moderating voices to the president. Although we saw during the first term such a high turnover in cabinet positions for people who did disagree. So those are concerns I have. If Joe Biden is reelected, either way, whoever's elected, it's four more years and that's it. So that's kind of, I'm stuck with the choice I have. I supported other people in the primary, just like in 2016, I supported other people in the primary. I probably won't be out waving signs, putting up signs, knocking on doors for Donald Trump. And, you know, I'll make a final decision when I get into that voting booth, and it may be a little bit at the top of the ballot.
Wait. Oh, you may not necessarily. Oh,
yeah, for you're Donald Trump. Just a minute.
You just basically told us.
There you go. So, well, and we'll see. There's a long time between now and then, and there's more time for these conversations. In fact, Greg got a text message last night from one of the organizers that helped put this together, former State Senator Don Balfour, who's been working with the Democracy Resilience Network at the Carter Center.
And for the record, he wants to take me on a tour of Waffle House, where he once was a senior executive. So
you've never been to a Waffle House?
Because unfortunately, Greg did not get a waffle on Tuesday night. So we want to make that right. But
it was Passover. Real quick, Jason, just to clarify this, I just want to make sure our listeners know, disagreeing better does not mean you don't want to beat the tar out of each other in November on the elections, right?
In fact, beating the tar out of a friend is more fun than being a tar out of an enemy, because you get to brag after.
Yeah, Michael, former Governor Roy Barnes, of course, was part of your group the other night, and I covered his entire tenure as governor, and he beat the tar out of Republicans frequently, took them to the woodshed in his office with some consistent behavior.
Yeah, you know, I've taken no greater pleasure than to beating my friend Mr. Shepard over and over again in Cobb, on our march to turning Cobb blue. So, you know, this isn't about, you know, watering down people's passions, right? Or anyone being less willing to talk about the topics that we disagree on. As a matter of fact, we're actually encouraging that more. We want to talk more about the actual policies and topics than all the rhetoric that goes around it. So we're, you know, this is not about, you know, trying to get people to not to be as passionate about where they are, right? Or maybe getting someone to flip their vote. Hey, if it leads to that, then that's great. But it's about having these conversations and discussions that really lead to hopefully promising solutions, because the downside of not having these conversations is you never get to a point where you have solutions that benefit the people. And at the end of the day, we have to remember that.
Let's stick with that, Michael Owens, because former Governor Roy Barnes, a Democrat, was at that event last week, and he said something that really stuck with me. He recounted a conversation he had with the late Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson a few years before he died, where both were commiserating about how they were probably deemed too moderate to even be elected to office these days. So when you're looking at policies that can really unite people, given the divisiveness over everything from immigration to tax policies to healthcare, where is some policy issues you see as common ground where both parties can come together?
I think there's issues around that tie people together. I do think, you know, when it comes to immigration, you've seen this shift, large shifts, and you want to go back and talk about when Governor Barnes was in office. So there's things I think around humanity itself. And I think if people ground themselves back to that, I think there's a lot of room there. I do think that there's also room when we talk about, you know, Georgia loves to talk about economic development, right? And Georgia being the number one place to do business in. And I think we look around policies and make sure that's true for everyone, you know, that everyone can take part in that, this explosive business growth. I think there's room there. And ultimately, at the end of the day, again, if we can centralize ourselves around, Patricia brought up earlier, around the partisan districts, you know, and these 70-30 districts that don't allow people to talk to each other. Now, that's something that Jason nor myself are going to be able to solve, because we don't want to get in the situation where our elected officials choose our voters instead of our voters choosing them. That is, again, that's not something we can solve, but I think that is getting to the heart of it. And having people to speak up about it.
So, guys, again, I want everybody to disagree better. But we have some very real issues on the table that are extremely divisive. Can you two right now disagree better over abortion? Can you disagree better over whether the 2020 election was stolen? Jason, I know you don't think it was stolen, but a lot of Republicans do. Democrats see this election as almost an existential crisis of keeping Donald Trump out of the White House to protect democracy. We hear that from them consistently. Republicans want to push further, in many cases, on abortion bans. How can people disagree better on those really serious live wire issues? And can you two do it?
You know, whether Jason and I, what we're able to do is we're able to have substantive conversations about it, mm-hmm. right? We're able to try to get to the heart of those issues and also talk about potential alternatives. You know, abortion obviously is a super strong wedge issue, but if you go one layer back and go, hey, do you support programs that will help mitigate teen pregnancy? We both will go, absolutely.
Right, yes. Exactly.
You know, do you agree putting in programs and substantive support, right, for those children, young ladies who actually happen to get pregnant? Yes. So when you start to peel the layers back, there's tons of things we agree on as it relates to the issue around abortion. So instead of focusing on this one wedge issue, we will peel the layers back and find multiple things that we agree on to impact that issue. Hopefully that helps.
Right.
Jason, yeah, can you expand on that?
No, I mean, there's always been hot button issues in American history. And, you know, some of these more hot button issues have led to violence. And that is unfortunately part of the extreme. But the more we can talk about it, the more we can say, well, here's where I'm coming from on the issue of abortion, and versus this is where you are. And we may disagree on the fundamental principles behind where our stances are. But we can work towards common solutions that we agree to. We need to find where there is agreement. You know, and I say Republicans and Democrats, typically speaking, want the same thing. They want the best for America. And there's Republicans and Democrats on both sides that will say, no, the other side doesn't. The other side's evil. And those are what we're trying, the forces we're fighting against. So while Michael and I may disagree on abortion from our fundamental differences and principles on those issues, we can find those common grounds that we are going to agree with. Same thing with the election. On the left side, you know, I've been saying since 2018, Stacey Abrams still has not conceded the governor's race and claims the vote was suppressed. So Democrat, and we talk about this at our meetings, Democrats say the vote was suppressed, Republicans say the vote was stolen. In some cases, that is true. There is election fraud. There is election fraud that's changed elections. But is it happening now? What does the evidence say? There has been voter suppression.
Jason, let me jump in, if I may. We know that this disagree better idea started really at the National Governors Association meeting back in February. But I think it's particularly meaningful that you two are local officials, because we've said on this show on many occasions that talking to mayors, talking to county commissioners, talking to local officials, that's where the rubber meets the road. You have to solve problems in your communities. And that means at times having to work together. You're not operating at that macro level. And so it does strike me that this is a sort of idea. We wouldn't want to call it a movement quite yet, but it does need to start at a lower level, and maybe it can bubble up at some point. Jason, your thoughts on that?
Well, it kind of continue on what I was mentioning about the Greg getting a waffle. We had a meeting last night with the Carter Center, I should say, to basically deconstruct the event and start planning the next one, which right now we're looking at Gwinnett County, also in the metro area, and possibly August, September timeframe. So it's still going to be called Waffles and Wine. Everyone agreed we're going to continue the marketing. but we are doing these events. And the Carter Center is also looking at the potential of getting Governor Cox to Georgia for a sort of a bigger event with more of a headline. So the conversation is going to continue. Michael and I may only be in the background of it, helping organize and push it together and get people there. But this is something that does need to continue. And the more it continues, the more other people hear that, you know, just regular voters, that there are Republicans, there are Democrats, they're working to say, hey, you know, things have gotten out of hand and we need to bring things, calm things back down. Elections are every 4 years. Elections are every 2 years. There's always a chance to change. And nothing is permanent in politics.
Elections never end. We got to take a quick break. But before we do, Michael Owens, there was a lot of former lawmakers, former political leaders in that room, Roy Barnes, Tom Price, Buddy Darden. Have you gotten any commitments from current lawmakers to help disagree better going forward?
You know, that's been one thing on my mind as we look to go forward and how we bring this forward, because we do have to bring it in the context of present day, you know, and I think you had Representative Doug Stoner, I think, was the only one that's currently serving. And then myself. So yeah. I think we will need to shift this going forward, and just the consciousness of people into who's serving today and what's going on and what's happening. I do think, you know, when we talk about disagreeing better, it also has to be about agreeing about what the facts are, you know, and Jason brought that up when he mentioned about election, right? And how people feel around elections, election fraud, or maybe. So, you know, I firmly believe that disagreeing better starts about agreeing what the facts are around situations. I do want to hear and push this to a more current context of people that are currently serving, like myself. Mm-hmm. I have to get to what current issues are, politics left or right. You know, what someone say, potholes don't care about politics.
Right. Yep. As you know, as Mapleton's mayor.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Michael Owens, Jason Shepherd, to talk about how we can disagree better. When we come back, an update on Georgia's costly push for green nuclear energy. This is Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Hip-hop is a product of Black people. It's a product of Black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents
hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny.
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at ajc.com/hip-hop.
Welcome back to Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The AJC has a special offer for Politically Georgia podcast listeners. If you subscribe today, you can get 3 months of unlimited digital access for just 99 cents. That's all of our breaking news, politics, investigations, business, sports, food, and dining. Plus a whole lot more. Access to our e-paper, the AJC app, our assortment of newsletters. So you can take advantage of this special offer for podcast listeners only by going to ajc.com/startA. That's ajc.com/startA. This introductory special is for new subscribers only. I'm Greg Bluestein in studio with Patrice Murphy and Bill Nygut. So last week, the second of two nuclear reactors in Georgia went online, and they promised to produce enough clean electricity to power a million additional homes. But the project has taken years longer and roughly $20 billion more than initially projected. So what does this mean for customers? Public Service Commissioner Tim Echols joins us right now to discuss those questions and more. Thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, and if I knew what I know today, I would have built four reactors instead of two, because we need the energy, especially the clean energy. But at the time, we didn't think we were going to need that much. But now with ChatGPT and data centers and Bitcoin mining, we've got so many people knocking it
up. So let's dive right in right there, because there's a lot of folks who would not agree to expanding nuclear energy given what we just went through. I guess the question, and we posed this question in AJC story last year, is Vogtle, Plant Vogtle, the dawn of a new nuclear age, or is it a costly warning sign? It sounds like you believe in the former.
Well, the renaissance for nuclear energy has been in Asia. It hasn't been here. We haven't built a nuclear plant from scratch in 35 years. Georgia is the first. Our ratepayers have paid the learning curve. We've been the tip of the spear. That's unfortunate. It wasn't supposed to be that way. We had the tsunami in Japan. And then we had the bankruptcy of Westinghouse. And then we had the pandemic. The pandemic. And even with all of that, we persisted to finish the project. And frankly, I'm glad we did. We really need this energy. And that is why at COP28, there were 20 countries that stood there and said, we need to triple our nuclear fleet. President Biden is very pro-nuclear. His DOE has been pushing for more of this. We've had great incentives. We just need somebody else to raise their hand and say, I'm going to do it.
Well, you're also asking consumers like me to raise our hands and pay for it. Ironically, my George Power electric bill arrived in my email as we were getting set for this show today. How much more has the Public Service Commission said Georgia Power can charge people like Patricia, Greg, and me for this big, big, big project?
Yeah, we gave them a haircut. I mean, it was going to be $10.2 billion for them to finish their piece of it. We cut that down to $7.5 billion. I mean, they were substantially penalized on this. We've got tax credits, $1 billion of production tax credits still that will come to our ratepayers as these two units are powered up and they're running even today. So, I mean, yes, it was expensive, but I mean, Georgia law allows them to recover the prudently incurred expenses.
Could I just ask what that means? How much more am I going to pay? How much more is Greg and Patricia going
to
pay?
Yeah, we said it was going to be about 8 to 12%, and it will be right at 12%. So your bills will have jumped 12% because of Plant Vogtle.
And will that be a continuing cost over time? That's my first quick question for you. My larger question, this is really for the benefit.
Let me answer them one at a time.
Great.
I'm 63 and I can only answer
number one.
One
and then I get a follow-up.
Yeah. So yes, that will be forever. That's in rates. Where like the Ukrainian increase because of natural gas, that was a three-year increase. That falls off after 3 years. So $16 bill of your increase that's currently sitting on your bill will eventually go away. And that was because we helped Europe boycott Russia. And the U.S. exported natural gas, which caused our prices to go up. But that will go off where the Vogtle cost will not be going off your bills.
Okay. So, Commissioner, for the benefit of our audience who may not follow the nitty-gritty of the Public Service Commission, these are elected positions. Tell us y'all's role in setting electricity costs for consumers, as well as your role in Plant Vogtle. Did they need y'all's permission to keep going? Did they need your permission to run that budget $20 billion over? What role did y'all play in it?
Yes and yes and yes. We are the state agency elected to regulate all things on the right of way that's out there, whether it's gas lines, power plants, setting the return on equity for the utility, all of that. We represent the people in making sure that a monopoly doesn't mistreat people, because monopolies tend to misbehave. And so we are that agency set to do that. So that means approving power plants. And my motion in 2017 to continue despite the bankruptcy isn't what South Carolina did. They canceled their plant. And by the way, all seven of their commissioners lost their job after that. So, I mean, we knew it was going to be expensive, but leaving $5 billion stranded, knowing that we might need the energy in the future, it just wasn't an option for us.
Commissioner Tim Echols, you mentioned South Carolina, which canceled its nuclear project a few years ago. That sparks a question, because I've been covering this issue, believe it or not, for 20 years. And when Plant Vogtle was first materialized, when it was first envisioned, it was supposed to be the tip of the spear of this nuclear renaissance. It has not been the tip of the spear of a nuclear renaissance. And in fact, other projects like South Carolina's have been canned. So does that mean, do you see this as a failure in that respect?
I do think the Renaissance in the U.S. failed, not just because the tsunami really had a chilling effect on the order book, but the fact that natural gas was so cheap that nuclear simply couldn't compete in the Northeast and states that had a deregulated market. So it was left really to certain red states to do this. What I've seen is a big change. I've seen the president move forward with incentives. I've seen his team out there at COP28 say, we're going to triple the nuclear fleet. It's got to be a red and blue thing. It cannot be a Republican state thing and have us be able to move forward with nuclear.
And by the way, we should note you're a Republican. You're also a Donald Trump supporter. And you're here saying that President Biden's green energy plans are effective.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, presidents, every president has supported nuclear. It's just been an important piece of the U.S. nuclear infrastructure. I mean, 25% of our country is powered by nuclear energy.
So, Tim, I want to keep bringing this back to the customer, the consumer. And the reason I want to do that is early in my years in Georgia as a reporter, I covered a few rate hearings at the PSC. They were the most mind-boggling experiences.
I'm sorry
I
you had
recall.
To do that, Bill.
I don't. I mean, to me,
you get hazard pay.
It is absolutely. I don't understand any of it, which is why I keep wanting to bring it back to us as consumers. So help me understand something. I've really tried to convert as much as possible to more eco-friendly devices in my house. I bought an EV. You know, so now I have an electric charger in my garage. Our water cooler broke down. Our old gas-powered
water heater.
A water heater. Mm-hmm. So I now have a tankless water heater, which consumes far less gas, but it consumes more electricity. So my question is, I bought an induction range, so I'm no longer using gas there. But I don't understand how all of this conversion to electricity, which other people are doing as well in some of their devices, is in fact cost-effective for us, or is it more a matter of it's going to cost us more, but it's better for the environment?
Yeah, it's that one. Clean energy is not free, and it is going to cost you more to be able to be a part of the clean economy. I'm on my seventh electric vehicle, and I've got solar on my house, and none of that's free. There's you know, EVs aren't at parity right now with gasoline cars. Maybe they will be in the future. They're not yet. So I do think as we green up this grid, as we make it smarter, as we allow customers to become prosumers, you know, producing their own power, even taking, Bill, your electric car and my electric car and being able to have the utility tap it for power on hot summer afternoons, that is coming.
Commissioner, one problem with nuclear facilities is what to do with the nuclear waste. The United States doesn't currently have an active storage facility for nuclear waste. So what happens with the waste from Plant Vogtle, and what's the long-term plan? Does it just stay there, and is that safe?
It can stay there for 100 years on the back pad out at the plant, and that's where if you took the whole tour of the plant and said, hey, drive me by those cement casks, they would take you way back on the back, and you would see these highly engineered cement casks that are about three stories high, and that fuel can sit in there for 100 years. They will then need to replace that cask. So you could indefinitely store it there. In fact, all of the commercial waste that's ever been produced at every nuclear plant, commercial plant in America, could be put into the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and it would fit there on the football field about 10 stories high. And so it is extremely compact. And the French are building a clay repository. The Finns already have a repository. I just came from Finland a couple of months ago. So it's doable. And I think as this becomes more bipartisan, you're going to see U.S. senators say, hey, let's come up with a solution.
We're here with Public Service Commissioner Tim Echols. Tim, it sounds like from this interview, from what we've covered decades ago, this was initially conceived, dreamed up as a less costly, quicker to market product. Instead, it's taken years longer, $20 billion more. Most of that cost is being passed to us as ratepayers. Are we as ratepayers kind of on the receiving end of a grand experiment? And is the hope that the next utility to go after Vogtle learns from all these mistakes that happened here in Georgia?
Well, I don't think it's going to be us that goes after Vogtle.
It will not, but other utilities.
I think it's going to be the Tennessee Valley Authority or someone else. You know, ratepayers trust us to make decisions on their behalf. We do the best we can with the knowledge that we have at the time. And America just hasn't been building giant projects recently. We've kind of ceded that to China and other places. I mean, yeah, we got the rocket, the Starliner, you know, the SpaceX. We got that. But outside of that, the nuclear plant's probably the most complicated construction project in America, other than those rockets down at Cape Canaveral. So I think, you know, we've got to move forward with it. For me to vote for it again, I'm going to have some kind of federal backstop. I mean, I would vote for another nuclear plant tomorrow if the Biden administration said, you know what, nobody's stepping forward. Georgia, would you do this again? We'll cover 90% of the overruns. I would raise my hand and do it again with that caveat.
Commissioner Echols, let's switch gears a little bit here because you did mention earlier you've had seven electric vehicles. I think you started with a Leaf way back when.
Yes.
It was a Nissan. And now you've, what are you graduated
to? I'm still in a Leaf. It's just a newer Leaf. I love the Leaf.
It just has a little bit
he's
more.
He's turned over a new Leaf.
I remember when Tim used to come to the other studio where I did my show for a long, long time, and he would have you would have left your car at one of the few chargers that was over
at
on
Georgia Tech
campus.
I walked over. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Well, when you hear, you're obviously a supporter of EV, and you're supportive, it sounds like you're a supporter of President Biden's clean energy incentives.
Well, I think Georgia's benefited from them. I don't know that I would have done it just like that, but I think Georgia's gotten the lion's share of it.
But when you hear former President Donald Trump, who you did support, right, twice, mm-hmm. and you're probably, are you supporting him
again? I am supporting him again.
When you hear him say that he wants to kill those electric vehicle tax breaks, that they're hurting industry in Detroit and beyond, what do you say to that?
I don't believe that. I don't believe he's going to do it because he didn't kill the other ones. The other ones, you know, were sitting there in place. And granted, Tesla had used theirs. GM had used theirs. But, you know, President Biden restored the tax credit. And I just don't see President Trump going back and pulling those. I think they're going to stay in place and folks are going to continue to get a tax credit for their EVs.
One quick question. It's an elected position that you hold. However, there has not been an election for a very long time.
Oh, wow. That's true. I hadn't thought about that in a while. But
so you're
I have
getting
been
a little bit of a free pass right now.
9 years? This may be a record.
When do you expect there will be an election for these seats? And just explain a little bit to our audience what the holdup is.
Yeah, the election for this year has been canceled. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to go back and redo a primary next year. My opponents are going to have to redo a primary. So all that's been going on the last 3 years for this cycle, it is over. So we are in a new election cycle. I'll be on the ballot next May after qualifying, you know, for a Republican primary and then a general in November. It's not going to be a busy year. We've got just municipal elections next year. I'll only get a 5-year term. And then in 2030, if I run again, it will be a 6-year term. So the legislature basically had to go and create a new law to make sure the PSC elections are staggered as they were before. It's a hot mess.
The Commissioner for Life Law.
Tim, I don't know that we have enough time for this, but please correct me if I'm wrong.
Lightning round.
Governor Kemp obviously supports alternative energy in the state, Hyundai, maybe Rivian, who knows. But am I correct that the legislature passed a measure, which he signed, which changes how we will pay to power our electric vehicles when we go to a public charging station? Right now, when I go charge at a public station, I pay for the amount of time that I'm on that charger. But in 2025, I believe the legislation says you'll pay per kilowatt hour and it'll be at a rate pegged to what gas prices are doing at the same time. How does that help build EV ownership in this state?
Yeah, it doesn't, in my opinion. But it's not pegged to the gas prices. I mean, if WABE had a charger here, they could charge whatever they want. They could actually make it free if they want. They just have to pay a road tax now. So it is the state's effort to collect the road tax, but there's no requirement that all the chargers charge the same price. That's not going to be the situation. So you still can kind of fish out the cheaper chargers that you want.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Tim Echols, for joining us in studio for today's show. We really appreciate it. Well, that is all the time we have today for an absolutely packed show. You can hear Politically Georgia live on 90.1 WABE in Atlanta, weekdays at 10 a.m., or follow Politically Georgia on your favorite podcast app and hear new episodes every afternoon. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review and share Politically Georgia with a friend. Join us again tomorrow for Politically Georgia and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
Donald Trump has been indicted in Atlanta.
We have so many court dockets to follow, but we haven't really seen anything yet.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution has covered every moment of this historic case.
I've been writing about this investigation for 2.5 years.
Our team is led by reporters Bill Rankin and Tamar Hallerman. Follow our coverage on AJC.com and listen to new in-depth episodes of the award-winning podcast, Breakdown, The Trump Indictment, only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.